Welcome to the Life of a Nephrology Professional podcast. I am Anna Gaddy. I am your host today, and I am a nephrologist at the Medical College of Wisconsin. I'm here today with Dr. Matthew Cooper. He is the first author on the paper we are going to discuss, which is Understanding Delayed Graft Function to Improve Organ Utilization and Patient Outcomes, a report of a scientific workshop sponsored by the National Kidney Foundation. This article was published in the volume 83, number 3, March 2024 edition of AJKD. I was thrilled to read it. And we're going to talk about delayed graft function today. So thank you for joining us, Dr. Cooper.
That's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So Dr. Cooper is not only the first author on this paper, but he is also the chief of solid organ transplant and director of the Joint Solid Organ Transplantation Program here at the Medical College of Wisconsin. He's also the past president of the United Network for Organ Sharing and received National Kidney Foundation's first ever Excellence in Kidney Transplantation Award in 2019. So we're going to talk about delayed graft function today. A little background on this paper. In 2022, the National Kidney Foundation sponsored a multidisciplinary scientific workshop to comprehensively review the state of knowledge about diagnosis, therapy, and management of delayed graft function. And they conducted a survey of relevant stakeholders on topics of both clinical and regulatory interest. And so this publication is a report of their findings and all of their work. It's focused on several main points, which is defining delayed graft function, practice and regulatory issues related to delayed graft function, a summary of the current state of delayed graft function, suggestions for outpatient management, and then guiding future necessary research on the topic. So I myself am not a transplant nephrologist, and reading the background of this article was fascinating to me. I learned so much about delayed graft function, and I've been hearing a lot lately in the nephrology world about reducing organ waste and you reading that the statistics of over 3,000 organs being discarded every year. And, you know, that's really, I would imagine for myself and for people waiting for an organ, I can imagine that's really distressing. So I was really interested to read this. And one of the things I thought was so interesting from reading the background about this was that there's been this push for more aggressive transplantation, partly as a result of the Advancing American Kidney Health Initiative and based on these new geographic allocation areas. But there's actually not been a huge increase in number of transplants done. So can you talk a little bit about how this new taxonomic system affects that or why this was relevant at all?
It's a great introduction. Yes. So in terms of even further background, my thanks to the National Kidney Foundation, because first off, you know, everyone has often talked about the problem of allocation and supply and demand. National Kidney Foundation, when I brought to the organization what I thought was a need for bringing experts together to address some of the major issues. Back in 2018, we had a discard conference where we brought again together experts to try and figure out why was it that, to your point, so many organs that could be transplanted, in fact, were not. We came to a number of conclusions, and one of those was delayed graft function. And so our next sort of foray into this was, let's figure out specifics around why this is a problem. Is there potential opportunities in interventions for delayed graft function? And full well knowing that this was a significant issue currently, it will probably become more one as we increase the distance of allocation between donors and recipients. So again, the purpose of this, you know, was manyfold. And I'll say, you know, for those of us, the listeners that can't see the gray hair that I have on my head, I've been interested in this field for a long period of time. And early in my career, there was a number of pharmaceutical interventions because it was really appreciated as an unmet need in kidney transplantation. It's unfortunately not continued to be so. And so our desire is to try and get more interest and more energy around opportunities, not only potentially for interventions from a pharmaceutical standpoint, but bringing together best practices and recognizing that delayed graft function, as I've always said, is not a failure of kidney transplant, but it's a reality of kidney transplant. And how can we bring together, again, people and programs and policies that perhaps allow us within the confines of organ allocation, recognizing that delayed graft function is here to stay, that we can do better with it. And so it's really what the substance of the meeting was about and why we got to this place. And I'm really proud of the product. And I think, again, there's a lot of really great things that even non-transplant nephrologists can take away, because this becomes, I think, a community problem or a community opportunity for us to have dialogue about.
Yeah, absolutely. I know it's so easy to get like upset about that number, you know, of discarded organs. We'll just put them in people. And, you know, reading this paper, I really got a bigger appreciation of, you know, the risk that will be associated with that with our current state of ability to treat delayed graft function. And, you know, when I learned what I learned about transplant when I was in training was just kind of, if you need dialysis in the first 7 days, that's delayed graft function. If you don't, it's not. And so as if it's this binary state of, you know, reality, when in, you know, the paper really kind of does a nice job explaining that this is really a very heterogeneous spectrum of function that you're describing, and to treat it as a binary variable is inappropriate, not just for research, but for, you know, reporting outcomes. I thought that was something I should have been thinking about, but just didn't cross my mind, you know?
Well, the truth is that, and that's come as a result of data collection. So it was easy to characterize delayed graft function based upon dialysis, because that was a reportable event to the mm-hmm. network of organ sharing. All the other specifics around why were not something we had access to. So that's, in many ways, the foundation for a lot of the further conversation. Is it's tough to think about the future when we're not really, I think, confident about the current. And so the rates we have of delayed graft function, yes, it's a percentage of the whole, but to your point, it really is a dynamic process with so many different factors that can result in delayed graft function. And we need to get at the heart at, again, the data, so that we can begin individual target interventions for those multiple factors that contribute to delayed graft function.
Yeah. One of the things I thought was very interesting in the paper that was mentioned also was the cost associated with keeping a patient in the hospital as a result of delayed graft function. And you know, thinking from a non-transplant nephrologist standpoint, you know, if I know that we're very good at getting people out of the hospital so they can continue to recover at home, which is great. But then, you know, following someone to try to wean them off dialysis very, very closely as an outpatient is obviously much, much more difficult than to do it while they're admitted to the hospital. So, I think if I were to tell any of my patients, you know, I can get you a kidney, you're going to have five more sessions of dialysis afterward, but then you wouldn't need any more. That's very different than you might have to go through a surgery, but your kidney may never work. I mean, that is a very different, you know, I think from a patient perspective, a very different disease process. So like you said, it's hard to study something when the reportable variable is so easy, but it's not really appropriate. So can you summarize your recommended taxonomy for how we should be discussing delayed graft function if it's not just yes or no?
Yeah. So it's a couple of things to unpack there. To your point about education of patients is critically important. And although we have across the United States an exhaustive educational plan for when patients come into the hospital, and we talked about delayed graft function really for everyone that walks in the door, but truth is, I don't think most patients at the time of their initial evaluation, when they're getting sort of loaded with information, really grasp onto that. But the question asked about, you know, how we create this taxonomy is we really want to figure out, again, what the potential cause of delayed graft function is. Is it a donor factor? Is it a recipient factor? Is it a cold ischemic time factor? And then we need to know the length of time with which we're dealing with. So as we said, delayed graft function as a diagnosis right now is dialysis within the first week. But what we need to know is DGF of 7 days versus DGF of 30 days versus DGF of 60 days are very different things. And the expectations, the outcomes of those just three categories, we should expect to be very different as well. And so we're looking at trying to create an expectation for reporting and for publishing that would allow delayed graft function to both be defined by potential causative factors and the length of time with which delayed graft function is demonstrated in a potential recipient. So, you know, all of that information is in some ways a starting point for interventions, potentially from a pharmaceutical company, best practices in terms of, you know, how programs, to your point, either find a way to manage delayed graft functions in outpatient hospitals, way too expensive to keep people in for a prolonged period of time, plus the risk. And then I think equally, if not most importantly, it's creating that collaboration with the community physicians, the dialysis centers, that we are going to repatriate these patients with delayed graft function back. Still have ongoing communication with the transplant programs, but figure out that we don't need to keep someone in the hospital until resolution of delayed graft function, which you said sometimes can take up to 2 and 3 weeks. And so we had to find a better way. And one of the supplements in this paper is a recommendation to dialysis centers about how to manage someone with delayed graft function, including the communication and how to eventually wean somebody from the dialysis machine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fascinating to me. I was, one of the things I was alarmed by was, as I was reading through the paper, there's a really nice summary of sort of interventions that have been tried and sort of research on the horizon or therapeutics on the horizon. And you kind of mentioned all the things that didn't work. And it just got me wondering, it got me in a little bit of a funk. And then I started thinking, well, is that just because those interventions don't work? Or is that because we were basing it on an endpoint of this huge ask of never needing dialysis within 7 days? Whereas if an intervention can decrease the delayed graft function from 60 days to 7 days, that's, you know, that should still be a positive outcome. So even the way that it was reported for these trials that on interventions that maybe had, you know, quote unquote negative outcomes, that would make a huge difference in what endpoints we're looking for from clinical trials as well.
But I appreciate that thoughtfulness, because again, we've actually argued this with the Food and Drug Administration for a lot of these clinical trials. There was this expectation that delayed graft function was a yes or a no. It's not a yes or a no. It's obvious whether someone needs dialysis or not, but it is, like we keep saying, a spectrum of ischemic reperfusion injury. And what we need to do is get probably a better endpoint for a lot of these clinical trials rather than do we see it or do we not. I've always been a fan of the length of time with which someone has delayed graft function. Again, back to our taxonomy. And so if we were to have a control group of an intervention versus not, and I certainly don't want to perceive any of this to be negative, things like pumping and things like utilizing biopsy data to help sort of guide this, they've been valuable, but they probably haven't been the best constructed trials. But I still think, as your point, it's the endpoints. We have to come to a better agreement about what we're going to consider to be the success of an intervention for delayed graft function. And it can't simply be, in fact, it's really, I think, unfortunate if we would get to a point that we think we're going to eventually get rid of all delayed graft function. Because in my mind, what that then means is we're being over-conservative in terms of our organ utilization or in terms of our types of recipients that we're accepting. We should never make transplant play to a number. And so, like I said, delayed graft function has to be sort of part of the expectation of a transplant program. Our delayed graft function here at the Medical College of Wisconsin is about 28%. And that's around the national average. I would expect us to see that as organs are traveling sometimes from west to east coast. But again, I think if we're going to continue to investigate how to make delayed graft function better, let's be more thoughtful about what we're going to consider a quote success and not just saying it's going away, because then I think we've really missed the mark altogether.
That's a great point. I think that the idea that if none of your transplants ever have delayed graft function, you probably threw away organs that would have been great for someone. I think that's a very interesting thought. I was kind of struck by the comments in the paper that it was, again, something I never thought about, the idea that if you accept a higher risk organ and a patient winds up staying, you know, having even a slightly prolonged hospitalization as a result of that organ being accepted, that then the hospital has to eat that cost. It's such an interesting, you know, disincentivizing centers from accepting organs that maybe could be great for someone. And it's just this idea that we only want perfect organs because those are going to be what's, you know, it's not rewarding people for doing good work, which is really unfortunate. I don't think people have that perspective. I certainly didn't until I read this paper.
Well, again, that's what makes me proud about working at a program like we have here at the medical college and an academic institution, is the hospital has to see the big picture. And the big picture is that not every transplant is going to have immediate graft function. We certainly look to balance our kidney transplant program with a live donor portion of the volume. And most of those transplants, very short hospital stays, costs, I think, are much more both predictable and appreciable. But in order to be a true quaternary, high-volume kidney transplant program, there has to be an appreciation not only from the transplant professionals, but the hospital has to be willing to accept that. And again, that's something that when I was recruited here over a year ago, you know, that message was one that, you know, I didn't have to, you know, repeat, you know, very often. And folks were completely supportive of that fact, that we were going to have, you know, patients that would have increased costs because we were going to work to say yes. And I think that's important. It's easy to say no. It's easy to sit there in your bed in the middle of the night and realize, boy, this kidney's probably going to have to labor and function. And again, one of the reasons why we wrote this paper was that we could come up with interventions, best practices, bringing key opinion leaders together to think about opportunities for addressing delayed graft function that hopefully would make the community more confident in accepting organs that we know are going to have delayed graft function, because you can predict it's going to happen. And so, like I said, I want to always figure out a way that we can say yes. And some of that yes means you're going to have longer hospital stays, you're going to have more cost, you're going to need some dialysis, you're going to need more visits to the clinic. But in my mind, that's the only way that you can be high quality kidney transplant program, is having all of that support around you for the patients, you know, that desperately need an answer better than dialysis.
Yeah, I think that's really energizing to hear, talking about how the global burden of kidney disease is, you know, such a huge problem, and how we're going to tackle it, knowing that there's a way to address these issues, and it's not just, you know, choose wisely and sort of a throwaway answer. Like, how are we actually going to address this? I came to one of the surgery. There was a visiting professor who talked about really difficult immunologic cases a while ago, and I thought that was so interesting. It made me so proud to be at a place where, when there's a challenging case, we try to figure out how we can make it work instead of, you know, saying no, which from a surgical standpoint, I can't even imagine how scary that must be. But I think it's really, you know, making yes possible is a great pre-kidney day motto. Having said that, one of the things I thought was really cool, like I said, you went through some of the technology that has really been, you know, trialed to potentially reduce these types of injuries. And just if you had to pick one, you know, pet interest or one thing that you think is the way of the future, what is exciting to you in terms of treating delayed graft function?
Yeah, I think the most practical, I think the closest to reality is utilizing normothermic perfusion. So in the days we started kidney procurement and transportation, the kidneys went in a box of ice. And if you think about it, yes, that decreases, you know, metabolism, but at the same time, you know, it's not physiologic for sure. And so now there's, I think, a great deal of research and a great deal of focus of better preservation and utilizing oxygenated normothermic perfusion machines, I believe, is it going to be a complete game changer. Now, those are very different than cold perfusion. So a lot of the paper talks about pulsatile perfusion, and most of that is, you know, under, you know, a cold environment. But, you know, there has been, I think, some exciting work and published work that I think is going to allow us to see, you know, not only decreases in the rates of delayed graft function, which, let's make sure folks understand, also as portends a better short-term and long-term prognosis, but I think, you know, allows us to think about even expanding the cold ischemic times and acceptance of longer cold ischemic times that we have in the past. So while I'm hoping maybe there's a pharma company out there that is thinking about a terrific intervention for ischemic reperfusion injury, whether that be complement blocking or whether that be, you know, a reparative mechanism, I still think the most practical one that is sort of ready for prime time right now is utilizing normothermic perfusion. And that's happening across all organs, whether it's above or below the diaphragm. But we've not focused enough on it on kidney because we've in some ways accepted, I hate to say it, we've accepted, well, if the kidney has delayed graft function, even if it doesn't work, we have dialysis. Like, that's not the right answer. Like, we should figure out now what's the best outcome and how to achieve that best outcome and put all the resources into it like we do for all the other transplants. Because we shouldn't just continue to think that, well, if this kidney doesn't work, we have a fallback. You know, the numbers of people that are being added to the wait list and the numbers of organs that are available is just not matching. If we eventually get the word out to all of the incident dialysis patients, we're going to have a lot more people on the wait list. And so we can't waste any opportunity. And so every organ has to be looked upon as that patient's, you know, gift of life, and we have to make sure that it works as best as we possibly can expect it.
Yeah, that's so. I'm, you know, 2026. You're the king of the world. And when I describe a patient's graft function to you, I would say, you know, this patient had delayed graft function as a result of a postoperative infection, or as a result of, you know, ischemia during, you know, surgery or whatever it may be. And as a result of that, they needed 28 days of dialysis. Would that be an accurate representation of how you propose we discuss this entity?
It would, and I still think that's a win, right? So my assumption is that the patient's off dialysis, but we have now, you know, appreciation of, and we probably also add in some, you know, donor recipient demographic data that could give us an idea of, you know, why was there maybe ischemia at the time of increased time of warm during the kidney transplantation, or, you know, what is it in the donor that would portend a potential diagnosis or a result of delayed graft function? But that allows us now to study that group better. And let's start to anticipate when a transplant is coming together and we have that donor demographic similar to the one you just described, and we have those operative expectations, the same as you just described. Maybe now we start to think about how other transplant programs, or, you know, what you yourself have used to successfully result in that 28 days of delayed graft function, and even continue to make that number shorter and shorter. So it's otherwise like we have just too big of a grab basket to be able to think about where we're going to approach our intervention.
Yeah, I think that's, I'm preparing some lectures for our medical students here, coming up in their physiology block, and thinking about FSGS and the way we talk about FSGS now compared to the way we talked about FSGS when I was in medical school, which was not that long ago. You can't see it, but I don't have gray hair. And it's just kind of crazy to think about, you know, that we used to describe something with such a heterogeneous, you know, etiology and risk factors and treatment implications and even, you know, clinical presentations, and we just called it all the same thing. And, you know, or MPGN could say the same thing. And so, you know, kind of thinking about the clinical trials that you read that are 30 years old, or the papers you read that are 30 years old, and how they lump all of these patients with this pattern on finding together, I'm getting the same vibes of people describing delayed graft function and saying, like, that's not, you know, delayed graft function from you know, falling down the stairs is not the same as delayed graft function from the organ, you know, having a very long ischemic time. So I think we're doing a lot of, in medicine, and I think this century, we're doing a lot of reframing of diseases from the way we used to look at them to the way that we look at them now. And that's fascinating to me. That's really exciting.
Right. And that's why you went into academic medicine, right? Like you like to see those changes. And I'm blessed. I have a daughter who's a first year medical student. She brings home now and talks to me about things that, quite frankly, I'm not smart enough to be able to understand. But the reality is, you know, you want to continually think about, you know, how can we make this better? And being in an academic medical center, not only with all the resources, but with all the trainees that are around us, they come and ask you, why do you do that? And if your answer is, we've just always done it that way, that's the wrong answer, right? So you've got to continually try and come up with the answer that says, because we've looked at it, we've studied it, we've put it to a comparator, we've challenged our belief, and we figured out that this is the best way of doing things, or that this is the way that we can improve upon the data that we had back 10, 15 years ago. And that's, again, another reason why working at an academic medical center is just so refreshing, is you're constantly expected to do better than they did, you know, before you, and to figure out how supporting the future generation is going to continue to advance on the things that you perhaps have learned, you know, during your time.
I know that this isn't necessarily about living kidney donation, but time to talk about living donation and how exciting it is that we have a robust living donation program here. And encourage anyone listening to talk to your family about organ donation, talk to anyone you can about living organ donation, and make sure that you filled out your donor card, make sure it's noted on your driver's license. Follow us at the National Kidney Foundation and on your podcast platform of choice to hear more about kidney transplantation and the way we can get kidneys for everyone.
Any closing thoughts you'd like to share with us about delayed graft function or living or deceased donor transplantation? Or
yeah, well, again, thanks for having me, Anna. And again, my thanks to the National Kidney Foundation for their support for transplantation. You know, the National Kidney Foundation for decades was certainly focused on end-stage renal disease and care for the dialysis patient. Now transplant has become an equal focus for the organization. And I'm so excited to see it and to be a part of it. You know, I would just say that, you know, again, for those that are interested in learning more about transplantation, if you have someone who has end-stage renal disease and has never been educated about transplantation, if you work in the dialysis field, if you work in nephrology, heck, if you work in primary care and want more information about transplantation, contact the National Kidney Foundation. Contact us here at the Medical College of Wisconsin. We'd love to talk about what we do. Having an educated population is, I think, the first step for us to finding an answer for end-stage renal disease and supporting things like living donation and providing access for those, you know, that need something better right now than dialysis. And so, again, I think anything that gets the word out there about what opportunities exist in transplant, you know, gets us to a better place.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for being with us. Thank you all listeners for tuning into the Life as a Nephrology Professional podcast, where we explore best practices and foster a sense of camaraderie amongst the kidney health community. Until next time, may your practice be innovative and your research be groundbreaking.